Good morning. Welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Elaine B., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater from Massachusetts. Today is Wednesday, November 6, 2019, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting. Today we're reading from the Big Book. We're in the chapter How It Works on page 66. We're reading and commenting on one paragraph only, paragraph 3. Which begins with, we turn back to the list and ends with, we could not wish them away any more than alcohol. Today's readers are Sandy W., Terry S., Alice G., Kenny L.C. Our newcomer greeter today is Nan K., and we have some announcements for Leslie M. after the recording ends at about 9:50. The reference number for yesterday's 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting, Tuesday, November 5th, is 13619. That's 13619. And the reference number for this morning's 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting for Wednesday, November 6th, is 13621. That's 13621. The OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We're self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states that each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I'll now ask Sandy W. to please read the 12 steps.
Thank you.
This is Sandy W., gratefully recovered in Connecticut. The 12 steps of OA. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12. Had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. We tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thanks, Elaine. Thanks for letting me do service.
Thank you very much, Sandy W. And I'll now ask Terry S. to please read OA's 12 traditions.
Good morning. This is Terry S. in Bend, Oregon. The 12 traditions. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority. A loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, film, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for letting me do service today.
Thank you for your service, Terry S. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature and then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we're discussing and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There's no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. Where this meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We're sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted using star 1, please. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book. We are in the chapter How It Works on page 66, reading paragraph 3. And I will now ask Alice G. to begin reading and then get us started with our sharing. Please go ahead, Alice.
Good morning, everyone. This is Alice G., recovered compulsive overeater in Wisconsin. We turned back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. So, wow, that is a lot of information for me. So it says we turn back to the list. So I've already have my list of resentments, and it says it holds the key to the future. So a key unlocks a door and opens a door to perhaps a place I've never been before. And I am so grateful for that. And it says we're going to look at it from an entirely different angle. I'm going to be open to having God in here, inviting God into the situation, inviting another person in who God will speak through to help me be open to looking at things differently. And it says how the people dominated us and the wrongdoing, fancy to real, had power to kill. How many times does it have to tell me in these few paragraphs that it's fatal, it's grave, it's going to kill me, I'm going to die, it's like poison. So to hang on to this stuff is not hurting anybody else except me. So can I abandon my needs, my three deadly needs? I heard an old timer one time say that need to be first, the need to be right, and the need to look good. So can I let that stuff be put aside and be open to letting go? And I've had some fancied resentments. This last fourth and fifth step I did in the spring, I had a memory about when my dad died, and my mom had all the pictures of my kids up on the mantle, and they went down, and my brother's kids' pictures went up. And I had to look at that and think, was that even, did that even really happen? Was that true? Or was that just something in my grief that I magnified? And if there is a harm or a wrongdoing of someone else that is real, how long do I want to hang on to that? And how sick do I want to let that make me? Or can I let go and let God heal me and maybe share some experience, strength, and hope with someone else who is still suffering? So, yeah, there's a lot of great information in that paragraph. And I'm so grateful to be able to utilize it today, too, in my daily walk with my 10th step, that I can look at my part, my selfishness, dishonesty, resentments, fears, and ask God in and another person in to help remove that and help me have some clarity and openness. So that's all I got. I don't know if my time is up or not, but thank you for letting me share and thank everyone else for their service today. Have a great day.
Thank you very much, Alice G. Okay, who would like to comment on that third paragraph on page 66?
Lisa G.
Lisa G.
Penny
L. Becca R.
Jackie H.
Jackie H.
Bruce
Freya
E.
H. Bruce E. And Leia, did I hear? Freya?
It's Nina. Freya.
Okay, Freya. Okay, great. That's a great lineup. I've got Lisa G., Penny L. C., Becca R., Jackie H., Bruce, I'm going to have to ask your initial again. I can't read my own writing. I think I have Bruce G., but it might be Bruce B., and Freya H. So Lisa J., you're up next, and you'll be followed by Penny L. C.
Thanks, Elaine. This is Lisa G. from Texas. This paragraph, you know, I never would have really understood it until I finished the steps. And now I look at it and I see 35 years ago when my 24-year-old brother died of cancer, I had grieved for him for 35 years and it dominated me. And my resentment towards God for letting him die, my resentment towards my brother for being a procrastinator and not going to the doctor, my resentment towards myself that I couldn't save his life. And for so many years, you know, all this stuff turned into food addiction and depression and anxiety. And I mean, I was in the deep pit, and I called it the vortex of nasty badness when I couldn't even move. And I would just sit on my bed and just think about how horrible I felt. And it was all just about me, all about me, all about me, because I held on to this resentment. And I couldn't have told you that I understood it 4 months ago. But now I see it, and God has removed it. God has removed it. And this program is just unbelievable. I don't even know how it happened. My sponsor says it happened at step 11 for me. I don't know if it happened at 11, if it happened at 9. I have no idea, but it happened. And so all I have to say is, for anybody that is grieving and depressed and anxious, I mean, I'm not a doctor, I can't diagnose anything, but I'll just say, just keep working it. Keep working it. Don't give up. No matter how horrible you feel, no matter how depressed you are, just keep going. Don't stop, because there is a beautiful light at the end of this tunnel. And I know I have to keep on and keep on and keep on every day so I can keep this wonderful miracle of just feeling light and happy and enjoying the day. It's amazing. Thank you. I'll pass.
Thank you very much, Lisa G. Penny L.C., you are up next, followed by Becca R.
Thank you, Elaine. Good morning, and good morning to everyone on the line. First of all, please, I need to be indulged and make an amends to Team Wednesday. I was to be on to check in ahead and to be available for service, and I was not able to be and I apologize to everyone involved. Thank you for your gracious acceptance of that. And reflecting on the paragraph, I know I'm at the fourth column. This is the turnaround spot. I need to be able to ask myself, am I prepared to look at this whole situation in a different way? I need to be prepared. It's important to my recovery, to my well-being. And then asking myself, you know, is it fancied or is it real? So fancied, the way I understand it means that it doesn't matter, you know, that I can just write it off. Well, chances are there's, you know, there's something more to it than that. So I really need to be able to look at it and see my part. And if I saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? Well, it's not going to be by me, but it is going to be the same way that I was able to put the food down. And that is by being willing to turn these resentments over to my higher power and humbly ask for the strength and the guidance to see my part and to be able to have a new set of eyes, to be able to see it as my higher power sees it. And that's going to take some humility and some grace from my higher power. But it's available to me if I'm willing to do the work. And so grateful, because the freedom that comes from it has been priceless. Thank you for letting me share. And again, my amends to the group. I apologize, and I will pass.
Well, thank you so much, Penny LC. So glad you're here. Betha R., you are up next. And you'll be followed by Jackie H.
Hey, guys. It's Becca R., recovered compulsive overeater in Kentucky. And what I wanted to key in on was the phrase that says we're ready to look at it from an entirely different angle. And that's what I've learned after years of being in 12-step program, really keying in on this 10th step. And I know we're actually talking about the 5th step, but hang on with me. But in the 10-step turnaround that I've been doing more and more in my recovery, I'm getting to that fourth column, which is the same fourth column as in the fourth and fifth step. But I'm starting to see what a huge part dishonesty has played in my delusion. And to look at it from an entirely different angle is to look at it with a sponsor who sees things that aren't being constructed in my mind. And what I mean when I say that is, I think I know what you're doing and what you're thinking and why you're doing it and why you're thinking it, mostly based on the beliefs of why I do and think things. Now, that's a bit of a tongue twister, but it's living in that delusion. And before, when I would get to that fourth column, I really focused on fear and selfishness, but now it's like the blinds have been opened and I'm seeing how often I'm living in this reality that is not real. It's all created based on what I think I know. And so how do I change this? For me, not only going through the fourth and fifth step with a sponsor and getting recovered, but really diving into the maintenance steps of 10, 11, and 12. And being active in those turnarounds and seeing that I can't, you know, it says it right on this page, you know, I have to be free from this. It will kill me. I also was looking, I've got this new big book that I'm using, and it has some of the original manuscript in the back of it. And, you know, in the original, there were a lot of, it was written in not first person, but it was written to you instead of we. It was, you must look at it from an entirely different angle. And I don't know, when I read that this morning, and that that you must really stuck out to me. You know, it's not about anybody else doing it. I have to look at it from an entirely different angle, because if I don't, I'm the one to pay the consequences. And it tells me in the paragraphs before, you know, it's deadly. So I'm grateful to be doing this thing with you guys. I'm grateful to have the ability to be teachable so that I can see that entirely different angle. Thanks. I pass.
Thank you very much, Becca R. Jackie H., you're up next, and you're followed by Bruce G. B. E. He'll let us know. Please go ahead, Jackie H.
Oh, thank you for your service. This is Jackie H., recovered in Colorado. And I want to talk about that, this little part here where it says, in that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had power to actually kill. You know, I've read this a lot of times, and it just stuck out to me so much a few months ago when I read it, and I use it now in my prayer when I actually am doing my 10th steps, because it's just so powerful. Because it could be fancied. A lot of times, most of the time, it is fancied. Sometimes it is real. Somebody really does do something that feels like it's harmed me. But even when I say that, I have to even question my own thought about that, because if anybody, if I feel harmed by something that someone says or does, as long as don't have a gun to my head, it's my ego that's being bruised. Because the part of me that is authentic, the part of me that was created by my creator, really can't be harmed by what other people say and do. So it really doesn't matter if it's fancied or real. It does have the power to kill me, especially if, and my ego can take over and make up a huge story. But I just want to throw in here that if things don't get all resolved when you're doing your fourth and fifth step, believe me, it will come up again in our 10th steps, because they do. It's such a beautiful opportunity that God gives us to be able to see deeper and deeper. But on page 62, it talks about how we get the ball rolling. It says sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that at some time in the past, we have made a decision based on self or ego, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. And how do I get the ball rolling? I've had some freedom with this late, because somebody had gossiped about me. I was very upset. I was bruised. I was sore. And I couldn't figure out what my part was, because I didn't cause them to gossip. But when it dawned on me, when God showed me that I was a people pleaser and I was seeking approval of others, that is when it was solid right there. I knew that if I wasn't a people pleaser, if I wasn't an approval seeker, it wouldn't have mattered what she said or did. And the resentment absolutely fell away, and the freedom that brought. And it had nothing whatsoever to do with her. My side of the street was I had got the ball rolling because of my character defect of being an approval seeker and a people pleaser and trying to control how other people see me, right? I can control how you see me. Well, that doesn't work out very well either. So anyway, I love this book. I love these steps. I live in them every day. They have saved my life. In my emotional and my spiritual life for sure. And I thank all of you for listening, and I will pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Jackie H. So, Bruce, what is the first initial of your last name?
Well, I'm not going to tell you. it's Bruce E. E as in Edward. Not E as in ego. E as in Edward. Yeah, there you go.
E as in Elaine.
You.
Okay, that will make it easier to remember.
You got it. Whatever is wrong, you remember. Yeah.
We've got Freya H. coming up right after you, Bruce. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you. And this is Bruce E. I'm recovering in North Carolina. I'll be here for about another 4 days. And after that, I expect to be down in Florida, but I plan to be at the convention. The world and its people dominated us. Well, how many years of my life have I done that? Yeah, and let that happen or allowed that to happen or been victim to that happening. Well, when I'm mad at somebody, that's what happens. Then I allow them to dominate my life. It doesn't even mean that they did it on purpose. I mean, I got in a place yesterday. We're going through our stuff. We're dropping off a lot of stuff down at the Humane Society. And the drill down there is you drop it off out in front. You go inside. They give you a signed form. You take it home, fill it out, and you go from there. Well, this guy says, now you got to fill it out all here. Put all the stuff down on the form. And said, yeah, but my wife has got the list of everything at home. It's a long list. He said, well, you got to go get the list, bring it back, and then I sign it. So then I kind of felt a little peeved about it and walked away, said thank you and walked away. And as the day went on, you know, that guy started to dominate me. The fact that he, you know, how dare he do that to me, you know. My precious time is more important than anybody's in the world, right? Even more important than God's. So, yeah, so I wrote about it. So it's a mini fourth step, you know, that Mrs. Brown, Mr. Brown, all that stuff on that previous page or two, you know, where, yeah, Mrs. Brown, he's mad at Mrs. Brown because she committed her husband for drinking, was probably his good friend. So that woman dominated him. So every time I get mad at somebody, I can let them dominate me, or I can go back to the food, which I'm not going to do, but I can write about it and call somebody. So I wrote about it. I called somebody. I said, oh, you know what it was, you know, I was thinking in terms of the guy didn't trust me, you know, hey, you know, it's ego. How can he dare not trust me, you know, because I'm such a trustworthy person. And actually, come to think of it, previously, when I was in the addiction, man, I wasn't trustworthy a bit. And still I have a tendency to go back to dishonesty, dishonest living. But, man, I've got a program to work now, don't I? And people to call. Yeah, I called somebody on that deal and felt better. You know, I wasn't on the phone with them but a minute or two. And did a 10th step, felt better. You know, and they didn't tell me anything earth-shattering. You know, they just said a couple things and was off the phone, felt better. So it doesn't dominate me. It still peeves me a little bit, but it doesn't dominate me if I have to go back and study that again or call somebody else again on that when I can. But a lot of times it's a little stuff. Yeah, thank you. So it's a little stuff, but, you know, it's a big stuff too, but it's a little stuff. And I got to clear away the wreckage of my past. So with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Brucey. We have Freya H. coming up next, and right after she shares, we'll open the line for more people who'd like to comment on page 66 in the chapter, How It Works. We're commenting on the third paragraph, which begins with, we turn back to the list, and ends with, couldn't wish him away any more than alcohol. So, Freya H., please go ahead.
Good morning, Elaine. This is Freya H., compulsive eater, bulimic in Colorado. Thanks for the opportunity to share. There are so many things that jumped out at me from this paragraph, so I'll try to keep it focused. But, you know, the main words at the beginning, that we were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. And that, to me, is very clear instructions that, you know, I just made my grudge list. I've, you know, listed all the things that I'm mad about and all my reasons why I'm mad about them. And now, guess what? I don't get to stew in it. I'm now invited to shift my thinking. And this is where the magic happens. And this is where I get to let go of my story, let go of whatever I'm hanging on to, and be willing, like, just make myself open to seeing it differently. So so that, to me, it's very simple, but it takes a pretty profound shift in the way that I view the world. And like they say here, they say the world and its people really dominated us, and that we are not in a good state when we're letting that happen. So I have to really understand that this approach of hanging on to resentments and viewing the world from my current angle is not working, because, as it says, it had power to kill. And I love I love that it says, you know, it doesn't matter if it were fancied or real, if it was just in my head that they wronged me or if they actually did wrong me, it doesn't matter because it has the same effect on me. And at the end of the paragraph, and it says these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. I love that that reminder of like, oh yeah, I get that I'm powerless over food. I get that I can't just wish away this problem I have, and that it's the same deal with these resentments, that I can't just try harder, you know, just like, oh, I'll do it better next time. Oh, I won't get mad next time. I've tried that and it doesn't work just the same way that it doesn't work when I try to, you know, swear off of my compulsive foods and behaviors. So when I see that, it's a relief because I know and believe that I can and will continue to be relieved of this food compulsion. And so when I read these last two sentences, I get the same hope of like, oh my goodness, I could be really, truly relieved of my resentments and my anger. And what a beautiful promise that is, because I know that I can't do it on my own. So I'm really, really grateful for this process. And, you know, and that I have found that it is the little things, you know, when I don't just brush the little annoyances under the rug, and I really take, you know, the time, it's not a lot of time, but I take those few minutes to really look to go through this process. Oh my goodness. I learned so much because it's the little things that build up and get to me and bring me into restlessness, irritability, and discontentment. So what a beautiful thing that just by being willing to look at it from an entirely different angle, that I get to be free of all that, you know. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Freya H. Okay, so we have time for about 5 people to share on page 63, paragraph 3. Who would like to
Stacy
share?
J.
Kathy.
Kathy B.
I heard Leia and Kathy, but I didn't catch
Stacy J.
Lydia T.
Stacy
J, I got you. Irene D.
Kathleen O.
Kathleen O. I think that's all I have time for here. Lydia, I'll put your name down. I missed a couple of last initials, Leia and Kathy. So I have Stacy J, Leia, Kathy, Irene B, Kathleen O, and Lydia, maybe G, I'm not sure. So we'll see how I do with that. Sorry if I missed your last initial, and sorry if I missed you all together. So Stacy J, you'll be up next, followed by Leia. I believe it was Leia S, but I'm not positive. Please go ahead, Stacy.
Thank you. This is Stacy J from Toronto, food addict and compulsive overeater. I'm very aware of the truth of this paragraph right now because after years of relapse and carrying resentments around for so many years, including a resentment towards my first sponsor, and that resentment is probably 10 years old, I recently, now with 53 days of abstinence, miraculously, I've just made an amends to that sponsor. And what I see here is that that resentment did dominate me in the sense that it gave my disease an excuse to keep the program at arm's length and therefore stay in relapse for years. And so it did dominate me, and it was killing me because, you know, having gone out, I gained back more weight than I lost, as we do, and nursed this resentment. And what I'm now, it's so amazing because having made that amends, I can see that I was using a resentment towards that person to avoid looking at my part and my dishonesty with her. And, you know, why was I holding out against that? It's like, yes, I was dishonest. Yes, there were things I didn't want to tell her. Yes, she was right to point that out. That's an honest way of interacting. And I'm just astonished by the fact that all my efforts to get over those feelings myself without the step process did not work, and I stayed in the food, getting sicker and sicker. And I already feel escape, absolute freedom from that resentment. And in fact, it seems tiny and nothing. all of a sudden, after all these years, because I'm willing to look at my part and because the freedom of 53 days of abstinence and peace with food, not white knuckling it, is so miraculous, why wouldn't I make those amends? Why wouldn't I look at my part? Why wouldn't I choose escape? So I'm incredibly grateful. I can't believe this process is as freeing as it is, but it absolutely is. And that's all I have to share. Thank you. I'll pass.
Thank you very much, Stacey J. Leah, I believe it's Leah S., is up next, followed
you
by
are
Kathy.
You are on target. Hello,
Yay,
Elaine.
Hi, Leah.
So, Leah S., back in Brooklyn, extremely grateful and very happy to be on this line. I'm going to do this a little bit differently. From the bottom of the last paragraph that we had read, we could not wish them away any more than alcohol. So, okay, here I am. I have admitted that I'm an overeater. And so am I an overeater? Am I entirely ready to look at it at a different angle? I'm going up to the top of the paragraph. Am I entirely ready? Yeah, I'm ready because the way I look at it, the way it plays itself out in my mind, that tape recorder, and what she did to me, what she did to me, oh my God, that guy, he cut me before in the line, you know, everybody's got to stay in the line. If that goes on, it's going to lead me to the alcohol. It's going to lead me to the food. Yes, so I'm prepared to look at it in a different angle. And the people are dominating me around me. They dominate me. Yeah, whatever they do, it's very surface. It's what I see. And it's what I see. It's not what I know. Okay? And that is going to lead me to the food again. I couldn't wish them away more than I could my alcohol. Okay. And then the wrongdoing of others, whether fancied or real, they had the power to kill. My anger took me to such lengths and to such bad places. It was pathetic. How can I escape? I couldn't, my anger took me to a place that I did not believe this big book. And yet, I kept coming back to the meetings. That was my last resort again and again and again and again. And I knew that I had to start asking myself serious questions. Who is right, that child that was killed or the guy who had the green light? Who is right? Because I think I'm right. And this program teaches me how to get rid of these resentments. They're not mine. I can't fix anyone. I can only do on myself. I can only try on myself. So it's a broad highway. I got to look at it in every different aspect. That's why this fellowship is wonderful. These steps are wonderful. And this program is just super, super. Thank you for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you very, very much, Leah S. And Kathy, you're up next. Can you give us the first initial of your last name, please?
Yes, no problem. Hi, it's Kathy D. in Colorado. I happen to be coming off of my fifth step, so this is incredibly meaningful to be reading this paragraph today. And for me, looking at the list from an entirely different angle, what is the entirely different angle? The entirely different angle is simply, what is my part? What is my part? What is my character defect that is causing the resentment? So, you know, I was just kind of contemplating this, and I was thinking about how it says, after we've done this process, we've swallowed big chunks of truth about ourselves. And I don't know about anybody else, but my fifth step was hard this time. The food is completely down, and thank you, God, it's quiet. And so I really, really could look at it. But here's the thing. I, in defining my part, I kept wanting to say things like, okay, I have not accepted this person and their limitations. I have been ungrateful. And my sponsor would be like, no, 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 no. You may not have accepted them, but that is a passive way of looking at it. What is your part? And then I had to really think about it and say, okay, I have selfish demands that this person acts in a way that makes me happy. Then I could see, okay, that's my active part. It's true. There are many things. I had a lot of resentments against God, right? I mean, I think many of us do, about all the injustice in the world, et cetera, why do children get sick and all that kind of thing. And yes, I haven't accepted that all those things happen because it's very painful. But what's my part? Again, it's that selfish demand. It's that trying to play God. It's wanting things to be a certain way, demanding it, trying to orchestrate it, trying to force it so that I can be happy, feel good, be content, have my instinct for emotional security met. That seems to be the one that drives me the most. So looking at it from this entirely different angle, I then get to completely let go and realize I don't have to play God anymore. I just can show up one day at a time, be loving and kind to the best of my ability. And when I fall short, of course, I have the rest of the program to fall back on. But I just have to give a shout out for doing these steps, especially with an experienced sponsor who can point out when I'm trying to be easy on myself. Thank you. We're supposed to be hard on ourselves, easy on others. And I've never really been willing to do that in the way I did this time. That's all I have. Thanks for letting me share, Kathy D. in Colorado.
Thank you, Kathy D. Irene D., you are up next, and you'll be followed by Kathleen O., if you guys keep it to 2 minutes, and we'll have time for Livia G. as well. Thanks so much. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you so much for your service. I'm Irene B., a gratefully recovering bulimic from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I'm happy to be here. The wrongs done to us, fancied or real, yeah. I had to revisit my assumptions, and everything that happened when I was little is important, but I have to let it go. But I really don't know what it is that I need to let go of because I don't feel it. So some resentments I feel very clearly, and some I don't. And so I'm really going through the process of uncovering, discovering, and discarding. And I have found that even though I thought I was fearless, that fear is what lies underneath all my disturbance. And I need to figure out what the disturbance is, because the only way I knew that, all I knew is that I wanted to binge and purge. I just wanted to eat. If somebody asked me what's going on with you, I have no idea. All I know is that I want to eat. What do you feel? I have no idea. And slowly but surely, with 2.5 years of abstinence, I'm getting to find out what it is that I feel. Uncover, discover, and discard. So fear is my thing. Fear. And then what goes in between my head that feeds that fear. Oh, gosh, a very faulty thinking system that makes me see fear because I'm so analytical and so attentive. I go around with my antenna, hyper-vigilant, judging, you know, who approves of me and who disapproves of me, because what I think of myself is not important. What matters is what you think of me. Are you validating my worthiness or are you validating my worthlessness? So what goes on between my ears is, it's terrible. So, you know, I'm discovering that, and I'm discovering what all that is, and I can't just remove it. I got to put something else in its place. Okay, I will just say that I need to replace everything with nothing but faith, hope, trust, and so much gentleness, compassion, understanding, and grace to myself and to others, because when I get mad that others have done to me, I've done to them as well. And that's good to know. So I can forgive them so I can forgive myself, or I can forgive myself so I can forgive them. And with that, I pass. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Irene D. Kathleen O., you are up next, and if you do a 2-minute share, we can fit in Lydia G as well. Please go ahead,
Kathy. Thank you, Elaine. Thank you, Elaine. Good morning. I will definitely do 2 minutes or less. Thank you for your service this morning and all the wonderful shares this morning. So happy to be on the line with everyone. Kathleen O, recovered in Northern California. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle, and this different angle is looking at my part. We know I never looked at my part because I never thought I had a part in wrongdoings. How's that for a big fat ego? All actions are born in thought, and my thinking was definitely my problem. You know, what was I eating for? Was I eating to nourish my body, or was I eating to feel better inside because I felt so awful when people didn't follow my script? Things didn't go my way. Clearly, being in a body over 200 pounds, I wasn't eating to nourish my body. So what was eating me? Well, the wrongdoings of others, fancied or real, had power to actually kill. And they did. They were killing me physically, emotionally, and spiritually. I was full of resentments, fear, frustrations. I was always annoyed. And I was full of self, self-centered, selfish, self-reliant, self-will. So, you know, through this work, I realized I was the root of all my problems. The common factor in all these problems was a big fat me, myself. So the wrongdoings of others turned out to be the wrongdoing of me. I was either feeling like I knew everything, or I'd feel like I wasn't good enough, smart enough, thin enough, all the enoughs. And today I know I'm enough, I do enough, I have enough. And freedom came from seeing my part, and continues to come from seeing my part and having a power that always helps me remove resentments and fears when they come up, so that I can be useful in a life, which the ultimate goal of this and what it leads to is being happy, joy, and free. And with that, I pass. Thanks, Elaine.
You did keep it under 2 minutes. Thank you so much. Lydia, we do have time for you. And can you please confirm, G is your last initial? Let's press star one to unmute. Lydia? Pretty sure I heard Lydia on there. And maybe I was dreaming, but that gives us just a little bit more time to welcome newcomers and to get numbers for available sponsors. So last shout out for Lydia. Okay, my bad. Sorry about that. Okay, so then thank you everyone who has shared. And we're going to transition the meeting now by reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Penny Elsie please read A Vision for You?
Thank you, Elaine. This is Penny Elsie, and this is the Big Book. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. we shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you